to case number 4, appeal 10-1943, Clarendon National versus Medina. Good morning, Mr. Barr. Good morning.
Please, the court, counsel. Your Honor, I just think it's best we start with the basic issue here, which is fairly simple. It's whether or not an exclusion in a general liability insurance policy will apply. The exclusion in this case was included at the tail end of the policy on an endorsement. In Illinois, there are specific rules about exclusions. Most importantly, Illinois, through its Supreme Court, has stated that they are only applied where their terms are clear, definite, and explicit. Exclusions are also to be construed always against the insurer and in favor of the insured. In this case, the exclusion that we're talking about states that the insurance that was contained in the policy did not apply to a covered auto, in this case a tractor, for a tractor trailer truck, while in the business of anyone to whom the auto is rented. Now, this case is somewhat unusual because typically the argument is about whether or not the auto is in the business of whoever it's been leased to. In this case, the question is, was the auto rented? In this particular case, it's our position that it was not and could not have been, because the auto in this case was owned by one Maria Medina, who was the wife of Guillermo Medina, who was the named insured on the policy.
When I look at the contractor operating agreement, it looks like an agreement to rent a truck and obtain the services of a driver.
Yes, Your Honor.
If that's not the purpose of the contract, what's the purpose? I mean, it seems...
It certainly is to obtain the services of a driver and a truck.
But it
certainly seems...
It was signed by Guillermo Medina. It's not signed by Maria Medina.
But under what principle of law does the owner not have the right to delegate the responsibility to sign? And there's evidence all over this record that there is, in fact, an agency relationship between Maria and Guillermo.
If there is an agency relationship, and if there was an agency relationship, then I would assume, and I believe the law would uphold me on this, that the agency relationship should be represented when Guillermo signs the contract.
What was the use of the truck to her? I mean, what's the use of it unless her...
To get her husband out of the house.
Operating it under these kinds of... Oh, you win.
that basic...
Eureka. No.
Yes, no. The use of the truck was to... Her son gave her the truck. She was the... There's no question here. She was the titled owner of the truck.
Okay, so the insurance application states that the vehicle is leased to Town Trucking. What else is needed to find that Maria and Guillermo both understood this to be a lease or a rental agreement? What else?
Well, Maria did not sign the agreement. Maria testified unequivocally, that she did not rent the truck to anyone.
Well,
but she was aware of the arrangement between Guillermo and Town, wasn't she?
She was aware that her husband had signed an agreement so that he could drive her truck for Town Trucking.
She had given him authority to kind of do whatever it took to earn money from this truck.
Sure, owners delegate signing authority all the time.
Absolutely.
And that's what Maria seems to have done here.
Absolutely, but when that occurs, then whoever's signing has to say, I'm here as the authorized representative of the owner of the truck.
No, they don't, actually. I mean, there are all sorts of exceptions in the law of agency, where there'll be an undisclosed agent, or will there be somebody with apparent authority, or will be somebody with implied authority.
Certainly.
And so there are plenty of circumstances where that extra little line you're suggesting won't appear.
But there was no indication here in the record that Town Trucking knew that Maria Medina was the owner of the truck.
Nor is there
Town
any Trucking indication that Guillermo was acting outside the scope of the authority. In fact, Town relies on Guillermo's authority to sign, and so I actually think that's a fact that may hurt you more than help you.
Well, you would find that Guillermo Medina never testified that he understood that this was a rental agreement.
He was never asked the question.
Well,
he did when he applied for the insurance.
Sure.
Excuse me?
When he applied for the insurance, you're contesting here.
He applies for a general liability insurance policy for the truck that his wife gave him to drive.
But he also says it's for a leasing agreement.
Yeah.
Well, if he said it was for a leasing agreement, that's, you know, that may be. But the fact of the matter is,
he says there's no indication that he knew it was a lease. And I guess our thought is, except what he wrote down in the insurance application.
He wrote down in the insurance application that he was driving the Volvo truck that his wife owned.
Look, she holds the license, but she holds the title. But, you know, she doesn't have a license, and there's no other use of the truck except through...
No dispute on that, Your Honor.
And she seems to have testified she knew what her husband was doing. She approved it. I know they're not lawyers, but they understand that they were both agreeing to operate the truck as a business, and, you know, Guillermo's going to be the front person.
Well, typically, Your Honor, if we're going to apply an exclusion, we should apply the exclusion carefully. And in this case, the definition of to rent, by Webster's anyway, is to grant the possession enjoyment in exchange for rent.
Well, help me with this. If this deal does not constitute a rental agreement for the truck, what kind of a contract is it? What is it?
It's a contractor operating agreement, just as it says. The typical,
but what does that mean?
A contractor
does it mean
operator.
Does Town owns the truck? Does it mean Town's borrowing the truck? Does it mean Town's leased the truck?
It means Town's leasing the truck.
All right, so it's.
So, but here's the difference, though, Your Honor. In order to do that, Town must acquire sole possession of the truck in order to comply with the federal statutes and everything else, as the contractor operator agreement states.
Is there any evidence that Guillermo was using this truck for anybody else's business other than Town Trucking? So in other words, Town Trucking did have, in the sense that the federal regulations talk about,
the term of 1 year. My only point here in making that point, Your Honor, is there was absolutely no reason why Maria Medina could not have sold that truck the day after Guillermo entered into this contract.
And there might have been a breach of contract at that point.
Right.
Because if she had delegated authority to Guillermo to lease it, just as if, you know, I leased my car to you and then I decided to sell it and some repo person came and took it away from you, you would have a breach of contract action.
That would be the case if, in fact, Guillermo was acting as her apparent agent.
Well,
but in this case, he was not. The Town Trucking had
an objective fact, actually, that has to come out from the record. I recognize your position has to be that he wasn't. The application, though, the insurance application says the truck was, quote, leased to Town Trucking. Maria knew that he'd signed the agreement. He was the exclusive driver. She gave him permission to drive. You know, on and on. There are all sorts of facts.
Yes, but she stated, I did not rent this truck, my truck, to anyone.
And so she's being literal. She could as well have said, my signature doesn't appear in any form, and it wouldn't mean much different.
No, I think she's talking about her understanding of whatever the arrangement was. She gave the truck to Guillermo to drive for Town Trucking. When asked, though, what does that mean, did you rent the truck to anyone, she said, no, I did not rent my truck to anyone. And as far as your honest question about whether or not there would have been a breach of contract action, for that to have occurred, Town Trucking would have had to have been under the impression that the titled owner of the truck had, in fact, authorized Guillermo to come down and sign the contractor operator aiding agreement, or had Maria sign as well. That didn't occur here. There's no indication on the contractor operating agreement that Guillermo was signing in any other capacity other than his own individual capacity. Your Honor, I think that the other point I just simply wanted to make very quickly was the courts, as this court knows, have in the past and utilized the federal trucking regulations in order to impose or imply or infer a lease arrangement.
Well, that's just because it's sort of rational to think people are abiding by the law. I actually had a slightly different question for you. The pricing on bobtail insurance policies is undoubtedly quite different and less than the pricing on a general commercial liability policy. The bobtail is just a little bit, and it looks like since Town had, through Occidental, had the general policy, this was priced as a bobtail policy as well. So under your reading of it, though, people can effectively get double insurance recovery by failing to disclose the owner of the of trucks, right? Don't you think everyone would set things up this way?
No, Your Honor. I think what would happen, what should happen, is the people who enter into contract or operating agreements should make sure that they're entering into the agreement with the person who, in fact, owns the truck, rather than simply having someone just come in and sign. The testimony in this case, in fact, was that the insurance agent who signed up the insurance knew that Maria Medina owned the truck. That was Guillermo's testimony. That's really all I have to say, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Lipsius.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Ira Lipsius, and I am representing Clarendon National in this matter. Judge Wood's comment is interesting because I wanted to raise exactly that last issue. That is correct. It's about one-tenth the premium for a tractor trailer under a bobtail policy. And because it's basically when the guy's out there using this big truck to get a bottle of milk or something like that, and not when he's operating the trucking company's business. What would happen here is this whole policy would now be converted into a $6,000 policy, and there's a very known concept of insurance that you have a right to believe what your applicant says. You don't have to go there and go all over the world.
That's well, but I guess what Mr. Barr is saying wouldn't be going all over the world. He's right. Suggesting that the burden of inquiry at the time the policy is entered into should be on the insurance company. It would be a fairly simple matter to say, show me the title, you know, at which point you would see that it was in Maria's name, maybe you'd get her signature as well, you know, all of this would have been foreclosed.
Yeah.
Well, your own insurance company hasn't done that on any auto policy. It is not, I mean, there's no testimony to that, but that is not what's done in the industry. You've never seen an insurance company go there and check the title on every single policy.
Then what's your best evidence that Maria explicitly granted Guillermo the authority to enter into the contract on her?
Her testimony specifically, and I think the court was right, she didn't rent it because she wasn't the one who rented it. She said she cashed the checks, she wrote the checks, she knew the money was coming in. Her testimony is very, very clear that she gave her husband the right to do everything. I mean, and we've quoted that in our brief, it's been before the district court. She knew exactly what was going on. I mean, she's not a lawyer. She barely spoke the English language, quite honestly.
But in the reply brief, the defendants claim that you waived the argument that Maria ratified the lease by failing to raise it below. Did you preserve this argument?
The argument was not the question of ratification. The question was whether what she knew and whether she approved it. And there's a question of latter ratification versus approval. And our briefs are very clearly raised below. And, in fact, the transcript is discussed at length. And, in fact, we were granted costs for the deposition below, specifically on Maria Medina's testimony as what she approved and what she knew. The other thing I want to say is an interesting point.
So could you just for a second, though, review what did she say that would apply to the pre-signing behavior? What was her testimony about the scope of authority she delegated to Guillermo?
I don't have our briefs from the lower court in front of me, but I will paraphrase it because I believe I know it well. She specifically said she knew her husband, her son transferred this vehicle to her. It was put in her title. She paid the insurance. The money came into their bank account that she knew he was working for Town, and she knew he had agreements with Town. The terms of the agreement she did not know. Or probably did not know. There's no testimony either way. But she knew there was agreement with Town. She knew he was working for Town. And she knew she was making money from it in a joint account. Money came right into their accounts there.
So the money Guillermo was earning from town for his haulage services.
Right. Yeah. Now, it's interesting. There's two things. One, I want to quote the brief of my adversary.
Your friend.
My friend. My professional and colleague.
Correct.
And not only that, but after this case, I even called him for some advice on a mediator in Chicago. So it's truly a friendship and not a a professional adversary. Correct? Anyway, he says the court's
prime. There's a love in the Seventh Circuit. There's a love in the Seventh Circuit today.
Okay. The court's primary objective is to ascertain and give effect to the intentions of the parties as expressed in the insurance policy. This court in Occidental, Hartford versus Occidental, said the context of the entire exclusion resolves any doubts about its meaning and its applicability to the case. Two quotes, their brief and what this circuit has held. And that's specifically what we have here. We have a policy that the guy applies in an application, says I'm renting it out, says I'm leasing it out to town. The vehicle's operating in town's business. Is there any doubt what the objective of the policy was, what the objective of the policy of the parties was, and what everyone intended? There is nothing.
Now, I don't understand there really to be any argument, in a sense, about that. You know, the exclusion clause says essentially that it's a Bobtail policy. I thought they were trying to, attack it, at the outset by saying a person with no authority signed it. Once you get past the signing, I don't see much in the way of argument that it isn't a Bobtail policy.
Right, but the intent was not to cover this. And it's on the idea of who rented it. But was it doesn't say that she had to rent it. It says is it the business of anyone to whom the order was rented. Let's take there's no agreement.
Passive voice. There you go.
Pardon me?
That's exactly what it says. A covered auto while in the business of anyone to whom the auto is rented. It doesn't tell you who does the renting.
Right. And by law, the only way town could have it is if they rented it.
That's where the federal regulations.
Yeah, that's the legal, the federal regulations. But they come in to tell us that's the only legal way they could have it.
Is the lease question, though, determined by Illinois law or by federal law?
Well, I believe under either law, I believe the federal law interprets what the documents mean. But I believe if one really looks at the operator agreement, totally avoiding the federal statutes, by federal statute, and by the way, I'll get that one, but let me get back to that. By avoiding the federal statutes, the lease itself indicates that operator agreement is clearly a lease, and the proof of that...
Under Illinois law.
Under Illinois law. They're renting the vehicle. The court recognized that. You read it. What else could it be? And add to that the application for insurance, which says, I'm renting it out to town. So if there's any doubt as to the intent of the agreement, when they got the insurance, they say, we're renting it to town. That's what the insurance application specifically says. But then we take the federal law, and that says it can only be a lease. And there's other courts. There's there were a number of decisions, the Northland case that was discussed, the Minnesota case, where the courts have specifically said, yes, it creates it not just for liability, but for insurance purposes. I think we have to, in any case, we look at an agreement. The agreement's clear. The application is clear. I really don't believe that there was ever an intent otherwise, and we want to go out the intent of the parties. Plus, we don't even have to go to the intent level. That's what we have here. One issue I want to address very, 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 just a few words on the late report issue, which the district court did not get to and was raised again on appeal. The one thing I just bring attention to the court is the evidence of agency and the comparison with the Burgos decision, there is no evidence of agency on Clarendon's part. The only evidence...
This I didn't think was the stronger part of your case, because if you look at the card that Mr. Medina had, the only phone number on that card is the phone number of Insurance Pro, and he's told, notify, and I just see... nothing that doesn't suggest for this limited purpose, not for all purposes, we understand the difference between agents and brokers, but for this purpose, Insurance Pro can be notified and they have a duty to notify back to Clarendon.
Right. So I'll mention.
Why isn't there a phone number, a name, or, you know, here, call this 800 number or something?
That's not part of the policy. First of all, it's not part of the policy. It was not issued by Clarendon.
You need to carry around in your truck, you know, the whole insurance policy so you fish through it when there's a problem?
Well, Clarendon didn't issue and never even knew about it. It's not in their file. It's nowhere other than in this was never in Clarendon's file. They didn't even know it. You can't create agency that way. But the more.
Clarendon was one of the companies that did business with Insurance Pro.
That's correct.
So they know that Insurance Pro is there, and they presumably received remuneration for this policy.
Correct. They do.
So they weren't unaware that this policy was out there.
Oh, that's 100% correct. But they were unaware of that card, that insurance card. They were totally unaware of. There's nothing in the record anywhere. And because that's the truth of it.
Well, how can they? Suppose they didn't think there was any card, and yet they said, you know, if you're insured by us, you have to notify us, but they don't tell the insured how to do that at all.
Oh, the policy itself, if one looks at the record, tells them what to do, and there's an address and a phone number on the policy. But the last issue is this agent specifically said this coverage with Occidental. The agent understood it. She got this claim. She didn't submit it to Clarendon because she understood that there was coverage with Occidental and this policy wasn't going to cover it. And Medina never came and said, file this with Clarendon. He never said that.
The woman who understood all of that didn't happen to be around when he came back.
Right. That's correct.
Perhaps we don't know what she would have done if she'd been there.
Sure. Anyway, I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, how much time does Mr. Farr have? 4 minutes.
I think the important thing to keep in mind here is what was alluded to earlier, and that was what was the intent of the parties at the time this agreement was signed, this insurance agreement and the agreement with Town Trucking. As far as that goes, the question that's before this court, and this is purely an Illinois law question, is did Guillermo clearly, explicitly, and definitely understand the nature of the agreement that he was signing? Pointed out the definition in Webster's is if I rent someone my house, I give them my house for a month or a week or whatever it is. Guillermo continued driving the truck, his wife's truck, that she was allowing him to drive so that he could work for Clarendon. Her understanding of the agreement was simply that. I'm giving you this, I gave him the truck, he signed some sort of agreement so that he could work for Clarendon. That's it. So, as far as that goes, I would point to that. As far as the understanding goes, rented can mean anything, and in terms of this particular exclusion, unless the parties to this agreement, and by the way, when both parties, Maria and Guillermo, gave their depositions, we used a translator. And as far as that goes, it's not clear at all that they understood the nature of this exclusion. It's not clear at all that they would have understood the rental arrangement and whether or not renting the truck would have caused this exclusion to trigger. All they knew was they were entering into a policy of insurance with Clarendon Insurance, which Maria paid for. As far as the issue about notice and the involvement of the agent, I think that's pretty clear from our brief. Did Your Honor have a question?
No, I want to just say thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
To both counsel, and cases under advisement.